by age and looks.
It'll limit you to one minority.
There we go. We're going to call to order the meeting of the Senate Committee on Education. Today is May 7th. And with that, we're going to do, because we have a number of representatives who have to get back to their work, we're going to open a bunch of the bills, and then we'll invite some people up. So we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2561A. Senator Greenlick, if you want to come up. We'll also open a hearing on House Bill 3335A. We're also going to open a public hearing on 3375A, and we will open a public hearing on 3308A. So if all three of our representatives want to come up, we will start with Representative Greenland.
Sorry.
I told them you decided on age before beauty.
I went the other way around. I started with beauty before age, but you hit both of them, so what can I say?
No. Thank you very much for your kind words, Mr. Chair. Thank you for hearing these bills, Mr. Chair. I'm State Representative Mitch Greenlick, House District 33, which is Northwest Portland on out into Washington County, and I'm delighted to be here. Let me start with my comments on House Bill 3335A, which passed out of the House floor on a 58-2 vote. It's a sort of simple bill in concept. When a student enrolls in a community college and completes 2 years of work in the community college, he or she ends up with an AA degree. If that same student instead enrolled at one of the universities, took exactly the same course of studies, went through 2 years, did exactly the same as the student at the community college did, came on, say, another year, but then for one reason or another, financial or other reasons, left school without getting their bachelor's degree at that point, they get no certification. They become a college dropout, both for the 40-40-20 objective, but more importantly for that student. What this bill does is it asks the HEC to try and to work with the universities and try and figure out a way to certify that that student has completed essentially a lower division course of work, so that that student, when they go to get a job, rather than having to explain why they're a college dropout, instead can give some certification that they've achieved it. And we didn't talk about an associate arts degree. We talk about some certification to work it out. We do already have, and I want to differentiate this, the reverse transfer plan, which allows a student to begin work in a community college, take courses in the community college, finish that course at a university, get those credits transferred back so they can get the AA degree at the community college after having completed some of the work there and some of the work in the university. It just seems that it's good for students. It's a fair thing to do. Shouldn't be all that complicated to figure out how to do, and we ask you to support this bill and move it on to the HEC so they can do their magic with it.
Thank you. Any questions on that bill for the
3-2-2.
Representative? Nope.
We have Mr. Schwartz, who's also signed up to testify on that. He came to me with the idea to begin with out of his community college experience, and he'll be talking to you about it. Perfect. As well. I'm State Representative Mitch Greenlick, House District 33, to testify on House Bill 2561 as well. Several years ago, in 2003, we passed House Bill 3118 out of the House and the Senate, and it was a bill that requires state universities, when they are hiring an athletic coach or an athletic director, to interview in their process at least one qualified minority candidate. It's referred to as the Rooney Rule, which comes out of a rule in the National Football League that was put in place by Art Rooney, the owner of the Pittsburgh Steelers, to do the same thing for the National Football League. And the irony of it, or the interesting thing of it, was in the next time Rooney hired a coach, he was surprised by interviewing a minority candidate who became the head coach and won the Super Bowl for Mr. Rooney. Oh, it's that around. This rule has been in place since about 2010, and when there was a university system, we were able to go to the university system and say, how's it worked out? Can you give us a report? And they would come and report to the legislature how the program is working. Well, since there's not a university system anymore, effectively, this bill asks the HEC to figure out a way to provide some oversight for the rule. And at the direction of the House committee, we amended the bill. It's an A and Gross version to do a couple of things, but the most important thing was in their deliberations to include representatives of both Division I NCAA schools and other conferences. So we have among our seven universities, Division I, I think Division II, Division III, and NAIA. So this makes sure that there's some representation from both. It's worked fairly well in its implementation. Some schools really like it and use it effectively. I know the athletic director of Eastern Oregon talked about how much he liked it because it gave him a whole new pool of candidates. It's not easy to drum up candidates for Eastern Oregon University, and he said he's had a much richer set of candidates, and he supported it pretty strongly. Some universities have been using affirmative action exemptions on occasion. Sometimes an exemption makes a lot of sense. There was a retiring women's volleyball coach at one of the schools. She was replaced. The woman who replaced her very early on in the job, in the first couple of months of the job, had an automobile accident and was killed, and they wanted to bring back the past coach to take over, at least on an interim basis, and that made obvious sense. There was nobody had a problem with that. But it seems to be working for better or for worse in most places.
Any questions? I only have one. We aren't including community colleges in this.
We are not including community colleges. This is okay. The seven state universities okay. are included in it.
Okay.
The athletic directors, incidentally, were added by the Senate Education Committee
right.
in the last time around as an addition. And that seems to have worked very well.
Any other questions for Representative Greenland? Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.
You can stay or go, depending on what's best. I know your schedule's tight, so.
I've actually heard these guys before. So I think I'll leave. Don't mess up.
Yeah, right. Thank you. So go ahead. Thank you. Chair Roblin. And for the record, Joe Gallegos, representative for House District 30, Hillsborough and North Plains, and a couple of houses in Beaverton. What I'm bringing you today is a House Bill 3308, and it is a bill that is meant to help us, the state, really deal with what we have an issue in the state with regard to this disproportionate outcomes in our institutions of higher education. So the bill is basically going to help us reach our goal of 40-40-20 in that it provides or will provide for a work group that will help the HEC to really look at the tool that was developed, the bill that, let's see, what's it called? It's the equity lens that the HEC had adopted a couple of years ago. And what this bill will do will basically help the HEC to utilize that tool. So the tool isn't any good if you don't know how to use it or how to apply it, et cetera. So that's what this bill is about, is really to help the HEC to implement strategies that will then help us to reduce that gap. And the gap that we're talking about really has to do with marginalized students, the groups of students that were identified: veterans, student parents, first generation students, students from minority backgrounds and so on, first-generation students, I think I said. So what this bill will do will provide HEC an opportunity to work on this for about 12 months to come up with a study that will, again, sort of provide us with some guidelines as to how we can really approach reducing this gap. I think it's true there are a lot of resources in our universities, you know, diversity offices and so on. But this gap still remains despite a lot of good efforts that have come before. So at this point, this bill was brought to us by a number of students and administrators in the universities seeking help to try to alleviate this problem. So that's what the bill's about. It's a pretty simple bill, and I hope you'll support it. We're here to answer questions if you have any.
Any questions for Representative Gallegos? I see none.
Okay, thank you very much, and there will be other
young people
coming up. Yeah, thank you.
To speak. So with that,
okay,
they're not leaving it because of you.
All by myself.
Yeah. I thought you could have a party to begin with, but you know.
You're good.
Okay, thanks. I appreciate it. Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. I'm Representative Lou Frederick from House District 43. That's North and Northeast Portland. I participated over the past year in what started out as the Minority Educators Advisory Group and became the Educator Equity Advisory Group. The fact that we changed the name of the advisory group is a reflection of the recommendations we made to revise and rename the Minority Teachers Act of 1991. 24 years on, the problems have changed somewhat. We're looking at problems differently, and we're looking ahead to craft a law that will work for us in the future. The main thrust of House Bill 3375A is to replace references to minority teachers, educators, or students with references to diversity and equity, and to replace references to number of diverse educators or students with percentages. The newly stated goal will be, as a result of this state's commitment to equity for the diverse peoples of this state, the goal of this state is that the percentage of diverse educators employed by a school district or an education service district reflect the percentage of diverse students in the public schools of this state or the percentage of diverse students in the state. That's the goal. Our state is changing. Our country is changing. Our world is changing. In aggregate, those who we now refer to as minorities may soon not, in fact, represent a minority of our citizens. However, the advantages and disadvantages that have developed around majority or minority status, as well as historical conditions, are cumulative and are likely to require specific actions to remedy for the foreseeable future if we are real about reaching the goal of equal opportunity for all. Education is one of those places that needs to happen because teachers, actually all who make up the schoolhouse, are professional role models present in students' lives every day, in addition to everything else that they do. Investment in a diverse generation of educators is a critical step, to address the cumulative causation that makes it harder for some parts of our community to succeed. I look forward to the day when we no longer couple the terms poor students and students of color as if they are necessarily linked. The bill changes the name of the Minority Teachers Act of 1991 to the Educators Equity Act. It restates the goal that reflects the state's commitment to equity through educator equity. It requires the Oregon Department of Education to monitor progress using federal reports on educator equity. It requires a Higher Education Coordinating Commission to promote a more diverse generation of new educators through teacher education programs. It does not require student district level plans. It requires the HEC and the Education Workforce Policy Advisor to report to the Legislative Assembly in each odd-numbered year. And finally, it replaces technical assistance with guidance. Senators, a lot has changed in the past 24 years, but unfortunately, the need for special attention to the presence of effective role models for our diverse student body is still with us. This bill updates the 1991 Act to reflect both our changing demographics and the changes in how we understand the issues involved. I urge your aye vote. It passed 50-8 in the House. Thank you, and I urge you to pass HB 3375A to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Any questions for Representative Frederick? I see none. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Have a great rest of your day.
running. Thanks.
So we will go back to House Bill 2561A. We did not have anybody else sign up other than Senate Representative Greenlich. Is there anyone here who wants to speak to 2561A? Seeing none, we're going to close our public hearing on 2561A. The next one was 3335A, and on that one we have Richard Swartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Richard Swartz, and I'm here today to urge your support and recommendation for passage by the Senate of House Bill 3335A. I'm a retired executive director of AFT Oregon, where I served in that capacity for 24 years. And along the way, I also was served on the Post-Secondary Quality Education Commission, where we produced the 40-40-20 aspiration, which later became codified in the statute. I'm sure you're all familiar with that objective. But what we studied in that and looked at seriously was education attainment, and one of the figures that was of concern was the degree completion in higher education in the window of 6 years. That's the standard measure for degree completion in the state. And in that six-year time frame, according to the latest figures from the recent University of Oregon system, was 56% for entering freshmen who continue through their original school of enrollment, and slightly higher, just under 70%, for students transferring into a university. Whether or not students continue to enroll to degree completion, it can be a function of many things, and many drop out and do not complete for a variety of reasons, such as family, financial, illness, and other personal issues. But it occurred to me, and the reason I went to Representative Greenlich, who I'm thankful for producing and introducing this bill, was that in the system that we have now, we've been considering those who fail to complete their achieve a bachelor's degree as a failure in the higher ed system. But it occurred to me that many of them may have successfully completed the undergraduate degree requirements, and I think they're still known as the same as when I way back when I went to school. Those are the required courses, subjects in history or humanities, social studies, some science, maybe math, that all bachelor's degree candidates are required to take as part of the degree development. And if they successfully completed that, but later did not complete a four-year degree, they would have no recognition of that accomplishment and still be lumped in as and considered a dropout and a failure in terms of our degree completion objectives. Had they been enrolled in another environment, a community college, for example, as Representative Greenlich pointed out, they would have been awarded an associate's degree, which would carry a value to them as an education credential and as a credential that has some marketing ability or capacity in the workforce for whatever occupation or personal goals they may have. The dropout, as we currently count them, would not have that any kind of credential as reflective. And in a job application, for example, they would only be able to check the box on the form that says some college. So the idea here is to develop some recognition, whether it's called a certificate of university studies or some other kind of name, would be to establish some recognition that for that successfully completed work that the student could request if they were no longer going to enroll and continue towards a four-year degree. The idea is not to create a new degree nor to create an associate's degree. It doesn't compete with the community college programs because these are students who are enrolling in the four-year universities. It doesn't disturb the university programs, the courses or degree requirements or grading system in the university system, but it provides an opportunity for those who leave to be recognized for the successful completion of the basic degree requirements, and as a benefit to the state, to them, but as a benefit to the state, they are then able to be counted in our goals for 40-40-20 and not just a failure, as is the current circumstances. It doesn't also doesn't interfere and is different from is completely different from the reverse transfer program. And I've submitted written testimony that goes into a little bit more detail about the distinction and how the reverse transfer program works. So I want to thank you all for the opportunity to make comment today, and I would be pleased to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions for our witness today? Not seeing any. I think you've given a pretty clear idea of what we're talking about here.
Okay.
And,
thank you
for your participation and for getting a hold of Representative Greenlick. So thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that would like to speak to House Bill 3335A? Seeing none, we're going to close our public hearing on 3335A. And we will continue with House Bill 3375A, which we already opened up. And is there anyone here that wants to speak to the changing of the name of that group? Seeing none, we will close our public hearing on House Bill 3375A. And that brings us to 3308. And should we do the work sessions first or not? I think we're going to open, so we'll leave that open, but we have some members that have to leave a little early today, so we're going to do our work session. So we're going to open a work session on House Bill 2410A, and we do have a new amendment that we'll have an explanation of.
Sure. Chair Roblin, members of the committee, House Bill 2410A allows community colleges to award training certificates for non-credit courses and programs. This bill was voted out of the House Committee on Education with unanimous support of those present. The bill has no prior subsequent referral. We are considering the -3 amendments. These are posted on OLIS. They require that the board of a district operating a community college follow procedures established by HEC to ensure that the course meets occupational employment need and fulfills a regional educational need. The bill has no fiscal impact, no revenue impact.
And we have checked with the author of the bill, or the people proposing the amendment, and they have been given assurance to us that... Do you want to come on back up, sir? We'll get that on the record. Thank you.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Wyckoff with the Oregon Community College Association. And the amendment, the -3 amendments that you have before you are sort of a refinement of an amendment that started on the House side. Representative Wisnant asked us to include language that would ensure that the colleges continued to follow procedures that would ensure that when they start, were they to start a new program in the area that we're talking about, that there would be a local workforce or labor market need, and that they wouldn't be displacing an operator that's already offering a similar kind of program. And the language that you have before you gets to sort of a refinement of putting in labor market need more explicitly into that amendment. And so we ran the language by Representative Wisnant, and he let us know he was okay with the, he was fine with the current language with the, that are in the -3s.
Thank you. Okay. Any questions? Then, Senator Knope.
Thank you, Chair Roblin. I move to adopt the -3 amendments as presented.
Senator Knope moves to the -3 amendments as presented. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? They are adopted. Senator Knope.
Chair Roblin, I move House Bill 2410A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Knope moves House Bill 2410A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none. Any opposition? Seeing none. It is passed. And carrying this bill, anybody want to carry this bill? If not, I will. So that'll be fine. I will carry the bill. We will close our work session on House Bill 2410A. And we'll open a work session on 2525A. I'll have a short explanation just to remind us. We just heard this a couple days ago.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, House Bill 2525A directs the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to develop standards related to the transferability of credits for community colleges and public universities. The bill was voted out of the House Committee on Education with unanimous support. The bill has no prior subsequent referral. We're not considering any amendments at this time. A fiscal impact has been issued for this bill. The bill has no revenue impact.
So this one, we did not get a referral to Ways and Means. It's at $53,000, so it's just over the deal, over the limit. The House didn't deem it to go there. I'm fine with moving it without going there. There was no request from the other side. It would be the first one. But if anybody is really objecting to that, I would consider it. Okay. Then I, Senator Knope.
Chair Roblin, I move House Bill 2525A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Knope moves House Bill 2525A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? It is approved. We need a carrier. This time I think I want a carrier. Anybody want? Okay, Senator Hatz. I'll just spread that around. And we'll close our work session on 2525A, and we'll open a work session on 2681A.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, House Bill 2681A directs the Higher Education Coordinating Commission and State Board of Education to oversee a work group to examine and recommend effective processes and strategies for placing students in courses at community colleges. This bill was voted out of the House Committee on Education with unanimous support. We have no prior subsequent referral, no amendments at this time. A fiscal impact has been issued, and the bill has no revenue impact.
So, Senator Knope.
Chair Roblin, I move House Bill 2681A to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Knope moves House Bill 2681A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? It passes. Is there any? Senator Beyer will carry. Okay. We will return to House Bill 3308A, which we've already opened. And with that, we have Tia Marie Gomez Zeller and Seth Joyce. And I think we've also got Carolina B. Morales. I'm going to get closer to these names this time. Thank you. And whoever wants to start.
Right. Good afternoon, Chair Roblin, Vice President Knope, and members of the committee. My name is Tia Marie Gomez-Zeller, and I want to thank you and you all for supporting such an important issue as the disparity in higher education and the lack of cultural competency. The HB 3308 bill has multiple significance for me as a student and a student affairs professor. Last month, I graduated with my master's degree in education leadership and policy with a focus in post-secondary adult continuing education, 2 graduate certificates, and a 4.0 GPA. Good thing I didn't hear any of the teacher or advisor who told me that my English wasn't good enough to get into graduate school. My final project was Cultural Competency, 327 pages. As a graduate student and in my multiple roles in student government, ASPSU, I had the opportunity to conduct a pilot study at Portland State University. So it had been kind of a study that if this bill passed, it kind of will entitle the same. It will be just a statewide where I just did it in PSU. In this research, I collected more than 1,000 surveys. We conducted 17 focus groups with 68 students. And we collected a lot of data, right? We found a statistically significant difference among the percentage of faculty and staff perceived by students as culturally competent. So it goes from a higher of 72% as perceived by Caucasian students to a lowest of 55% as perceived by Native America. Now when we look even sexual minorities and other students, the percent even go down 40. So I don't know if you have ever taken a test and get a 40%, no good. So this is the same. Looking into the qualitative data, we were looking what were those experiences of PSU students, and we found we create a code where we were touching discrimination, assumption and stereotype, problematic language, lack of support, lack of understanding, knowledge and opening, as well as the important role that identity recognition, support and openness, together with having safer spaces, have for PSU students in order to graduate, especially for those who come from traditionally marginalized community, like a student of color or the LGBT community. We observed power different relations, sexist and racist remark, including some faculty who were calling racial slurs to students. We found the percent and experience reported by non-traditional students, especially those who come from traditionally marginalized community, suggested the need for cultural competency trainings in PSU for faculty and staff. Also, we live in a more than ever globalized world. I just got an iPhone, and I was looking, you know, the bag, and it looks like some pieces was made in China, and it was sent to Thailand, and then in California, and it was Indian girl who sold the phone to me, who I'm American Spaniard, and my grandparents were American German. So, and that's just getting an iPhone, right? Imagine just going to college or anything else. So this bill, not only we help non-traditionally marginalized community, but we help every student, because no matter where you work nowadays, you need certain level of cultural competency. We have a winter symposium about internationalization, and we have Intel, Nike, and different organizations coming to talk, what do we want from our employees? And the first thing was intercultural communication. Our employees need to know how to work with people different background. Now, if our faculty doesn't know who to work with people different background, if our staff don't know how to work with those students, how those students are going to get the skills, knowledge, and awareness, and the attitude that they need to be successful in their workplace, right? So with this, ASPSU created a committee of student, faculty, and staff. PSU have been working in developing a policy on cultural competency to make sure that we're bringing cultural competency to fill up in the gap of those students, and to give, again, what students need to be successful in a workplace. We also have the academic vice provost giving their support, and currently we're working in creating that policy that we give the necessary resources to develop the awareness, knowledge, attitude, and skill necessary to host an environment of respect, effective interaction among people of diverse background, recognizing and affirming the value of worth and individual families and marginalized communities. HB 3308 continues the work of students at PSU and across the state have started to increase safety and success of a student and our campus, and it's the right next step to ensure all the public institution of higher ed is offering to the student what they need, again, to be a successful employee, not only for themselves, but also for the state of Oregon. Thank you very much for your time. If you have more questions, if you want to read this awesome paper, not because it's mine, but it's pretty awesome. People have said it, so I'm excited to believe it.
Thank you very much. We'll go through the whole panel and then we'll ask questions, so thank you.
No, that's going to be too close.
It doesn't. You can sit quite a ways away. It'll pick it up, so you're good.
Chair Roblin, Vice Chair Knope, and members of the committee, my name is Seth Joyce, and I'm a student at Lane Community College. I'm here today with the Oregon Student Association to urge your support of House Bill 3308. When I was born, the doctors informed my parents that they now had a beautiful baby girl, and my overjoyed parents picked the name Sarah. Growing up, I felt an increasing sense of discomfort with these labels. I wasn't quite like the other girls in my class, but I didn't quite fit in with the boys either. The name Sarah was something that never quite fit, and I always remember wanting a nickname or something else to go by that was less defined. I often felt out of place. The teachers continued to tell me that it was normal and I would fit in if I tried, and believe me, I did try. I would reach out to my parents, but they just couldn't understand why I wouldn't be normal and just fit in. And talking to my friends was, the word that was commonly used was tomboy. Another one was weird. It was 15 years before I met people who could teach me that it was completely okay to be different, that told me I wasn't alone. I've met friends who accepted me for who I was, and prior to meeting these people, I was going to end my life. When I learned that I could be neither male nor female, that there were many other genderqueer people who felt like I did, and the confusion of the square piece stuck outside a round hole, I finally was able to accept who I was. People with like me also felt like their bodies and names didn't quite match who they were. I am here today because of those people. We need to identify and develop resources so that the people on our campuses have the tools to be culturally competent. In a growing diverse community, campuses need to be prepared to help students reach their fullest ability. We need cultural competency so that people can go out and teach other people like me that it is okay to be different. Knowledge is so important. Knowledge saves lives. Something as simple as knowing you're not alone can make all the difference. I am here before you today as Seth Augustus Joyce, a name that I can associate with myself and feel comfortable with. I am finally able to be proud of who I am and love myself, and everyone deserves the support and education I got. I am asking you to pass House Bill 3308 because people like me need to be accepted and educated, not ignored or told to assimilate. Every day I face teachers who don't understand or respect my name and pronouns. I am Seth Joyce. I know who I am. And yet, people question me, asking, are you sure you won't regret this? You'll grow out of it. Don't make any rash decisions. Cultural competency would allow students to get the support they need, an education that might save their lives. Please remember my story when voting on this bill. Thank you for letting me speak with you today.
Thanks, Seth.
I guess that means I'm up, huh?
All you.
All right. Well, good afternoon, Chair Roblin, Vice Chair Canope, and members of the committee. My name is Carolina de Moraes. You probably know me by Lena by now. I'm here with the Oregon Students Association to urge your support of House Bill 3308. I suffer from a mental illness known as bipolar disorder type 1, as well as post-traumatic stress disorder. Due to my condition, I've encountered many obstacles, and oftentimes directly from faculty and staff that simply don't understand the intricacies of my condition. My most recent experience was during finals at the end of this past winter term, where I suffered severely traumatic flashbacks and debilitating panic attacks, which left me in a very disoriented state to take finals. On the eve of my last day of finals, my flashbacks and anxiety levels led to a night of insomnia and exhausting bouts of adrenaline overdrive. My first final the next morning entailed giving a speech in front of a classroom full of my peers, a task I normally revel in. I love public speaking. In my current state, however, the thought of standing in front of critiquing eyes left me feeling vulnerable. I felt it would be in my best interest to speak to my professor prior to the session and let them know what was going on. When I attempted to explain the situation, I was met with curt responses of a just do it nature, which in the state I was in felt accusatory and really not helpful at all. When my turn arrived, the tears I had stifled broke back the weak-willed barrier that I had put up and came flooding to the surface for all to see. This instance could have been prevented if my professor would have had the adequate understanding through professional development to support my condition. Without cultural competency in continuing education, students feel isolated from faculty and unsafe in the classroom. Lack of cultural competency creates academic success barriers. It prevents us from seeking help, speaking up, and reaching out. It has been my experience that faculty with training in cultural competency are better able to provide safe space environments and have the tools to ensure students with a mental illness achieve and surpass their goals. Without programs to teach cultural competency to faculty and staff, I fear we will continue to see a disproportionate dropout rate amongst students with mental illness, and I fear that myself may be included in that. This is why I support House Bill 3308, and I encourage this committee to pass it. Please remember my story, and thank you for hearing me today.
Any questions for this panel? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So next we have, I think it's, is it Danita? Danita Harris, Melinda Joy, Johannes Tedio.
Thank you.
Hello. Chair Roblin, Vice Chair Knob, and members of the committee. My name is Danita Harris, and I am a fourth-year non-traditional student at Western Oregon University. And I am here with the Oregon Student Association to support your to urge your support in House Bill 3308. My third year at Western Oregon University focused heavily on my major in sociology. As a focus, we tackle big social issues, past and current. While discussing mechanisms for dehumanization, our lecture focused primarily around language use. To demonstrate how language can dehumanize an individual, this professor used the word nigger. With great exaggeration, his point was well made and lessons learned. However, this continued for 3 weeks. 37 times he said nigger, all the while defending his usage as a lesson and justified his ability to do so because he has black friends. Every time this was said, it chipped away pieces of myself and my belief in the university system. You see, before attending Western Oregon University, I was a high school dropout. I felt defined by statistics that analyzed my failure rate, not my success. Coming to Western Oregon is a step in breaking what I call a cycle of statistical sabotage. When a marginalized student steps in through the doors of a university, there's a sense of implied safety. When that sense of safety was removed, for me, I stopped attending class. I made my own safety by creating walls and setting barriers while shutting down. This could have jeopardized my academic success and stifled my future. Training in cultural competency would have provided this professor with the skills necessary to provide a critical and heartfelt lesson while also maintaining a safe space. After this experience, I felt extremely guarded. The classroom was no longer a safe environment for learning. This is something that no one should ever have to experience, and to make that happen, we need to research what cultural competency education could look like. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak today, and I urge your support in 3308.
Chair Roblin, Vice Chair Knopf, and members of the committee, my name is Melinda Joy. I'm from Coos Bay. As a student at Portland State University, I'm here to support House Bill 3308. I'm the youngest of seven children, and I, like all my siblings before me, began life solely dependent on the very extended family members' generosity. Eventually, I, too, was placed in foster care system. After I was released as a ward of the state at age 16, I was on my own. I made sure to complete my GED, and although I had no family support or the resources to afford it, I somehow made it to community college. As a first-generation college student with a disability, I can share with you some of my difficulties in attaining my education. In 2007 was my first year at Southwestern Oregon Community College. To be honest, I barely remember any of my classes. My first term, I worked the graveyard shift at a local residential treatment center for girls so I could afford to live in the dorms. Working to pay for school while balancing school was difficult. I found myself searching for anything that could fit my schedule. I bartended, waited tables. I even spent time as a medical bill collector. I explored the world college had to offer, and I finished my prerequisites and graduated with an AA degree in 2011 with $23,044 of debt. That summer, I was accepted into Pacific University's School of Dental Health Sciences. As one of the most prestigious schools for dental hygiene in the Northwest, I scraped together whatever money I could to pay for the cost of attending a private university. While at Pacific, I encountered my first real struggle with explaining the difficulties I faced with my disability. The Resource Center for Students with Disability was on another campus in a different city, and because of the compartmentalization, no one in my program knew anything about what it was or the services that they could offer. After completing the requirements to be approved for accommodations by the DRC, I was surprised to find that my program was resistant to and had difficulties with even the simple of requests, such as a note taker. After a car accident, my first one, I had new accommodations. While I recovered, my program refused to accommodate me until I had received approval from yet another administrator on a different campus. By the time I had received it, I was too late to salvage my grades. In a competitive environment where 79% is a failure, I was pushed out, and I had the inconvenience of experiencing a car accident. They assured me that I could simply reapply as soon as my physical therapy was complete. After a semester off, I did reapply, and I was denied. Being disabled meant, in their eyes, I was incapable of becoming a dental hygienist in their program, which cost me $62,000. It's important to understand that earning my college degree was my one and only shot. I had managed to get to college, but doing so was a huge risk I took, knowing that I had no safety net. Please understand that being here, being me, is inherently more expensive and requires considerably more effort than my peers. People of marginalized communities struggle not only with their everyday concerns of life, but also with the penalties of their marginalization. Undeterred, I researched other ways I could utilize my education and eventually transferred to Portland State University's School of Community Health. The DRC there is arguably better than what I experienced, but even at Portland State, I struggle with the stigma associated with my disability, as if that somehow makes it me less deserving of an education. In spite of my struggles today, I'm proud to say that I'm graduating with a Bachelor's of Science. I'm double majoring in Health Science and Community Health Education, which is costing me $26,601, for a total of $112,222, roughly, plus my cost for this semester. That's what it's cost me to go to school. The average debt in Oregon for students is somewhere around $25,000. If you can solve the problems of the average student in Oregon, you still leave me with about $75,000 of other problems to deal with. Helping marginalized communities will never happen if we don't build equity. If marginalized people don't have a voice, we can't even begin to do that. House Bill 3308 gives people like me a voice so that one day receiving an education will depend on nothing more than the will and determination of an individual to complete their studies. Our professors and our staff need these continuing education resources in order to better support all students on our campuses. I believe House Bill 3308 is a solid solution in that direction. Please support it.
Thank you.
Hello, Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Johannes Tadeo. I'm a student at Lane Community College, and I'm here to urge you to pass House Bill 3308. Lane Community College has a slogan that says, "Success starts here." Right? I don't know if y'all see it when you drive by, but something that doesn't say is that it has a lack of cultural competency. That when students of color like myself come here and attend post-secondary education, that we have to suffer through words that are that have been said by faculty, by staff, by employees at this institution. Something else that happened at Lane Community College is that cultural competency did pass by the Board of Education, but something sad about it is that they didn't really go ahead and really implement it. I mean, because students are still being affected, still being profiled. Students of color come here, come to a post-secondary education to have a second chance. Some of us who needed that second chance, others come there, you know, to go to a to a university and get the degree and whatever they want to be in the workforce. Sadly, for myself, Lane Community College was a second chance. It's a second chance for me to show my family that me being the first one in my family to go to college, to set the example for my cousins, my nephew, one of my cousins, which is going to attend Lane Community College next year, sadly still have to suffer through these situations that faculty and staff aren't prepped for to deal with. Instead, become some of the oppressors to people, students of color, to people with disabilities, and also with the LGBTQ community. And this destroys us. I mean, so I had an incident that happened 2 weeks ago. Public safety, they sent 5 public safety officers to escort me off campus for a false accusation. The accusation, apparently I've been profiled, that I wear bandanas, that I dress in an attire that is supposedly gang-related. Myself, I do not dress in the way that they have profiled me. I come to this institution, I pay out of pocket thousands of dollars each term since I started this institution. I do not get financial aid. I have to work 3 jobs to support myself and put myself through this, through my education. And this isn't the first time that I've been affected. And this has not been the first time that students of color have been affected at this institution. Last term, I have to save up to pay for that term, I ended up being suspended in college 4.5 weeks for false accusations by faculty, staff, and employees, and some students. All accusations ended up being unsustained. But the way that they portrayed me, the way they criminalized me, was outrageous. It destroyed me. It made me go to the point that I don't feel comfortable going to my classes. I don't feel comfortable being at school in general. I'm trying to concentrate and take sociology or or geology or whatever I'm taking this term, and I can't concentrate. I can't sleep at night because I'm afraid that I might be suspended again, or I have to go to another citation meeting of how somebody perceived me. Apparently I can't stand up straight during meetings because it's intimidating. Their words from staff. So apparently I have to be slouched over to speak with them. A student was profiled yesterday at Lane Community College, only asking what makes him intimidating. The person who said that he was intimidating felt unsafe with him, and he was only asking a question to clarify. But apparently his skin was being intimidating. This person has a great GPA at this institution. Like I said, we're students, that some of us may have a past, but it's in the past. This institution is a second chance for us, and some it's the first chance that they ever had. Well, if they're going to continue to be pushed out, like myself, I mean, sorry. as you can see, I don't have notes.
I understand.
Okay, to go to another example, there's a student that came there for a GD, which is a three-month program. A three-month program, sadly already profiled by the way he dressed. And there was a trespass put on this student and eventually taken away. Well, you basically gave the courage to the student to want to come and you know, challenge himself to get an education, to end up having dreams and hopefully reaching them, but never will reach now. And that's sad. Like myself, I almost considered suicide when I was suspended. My entire life, I have been criminalized. I've been through the K-12 system here in Oregon. I have scars on my arms from being 5 years old, trying to cut the brown off my skin, trying to dye my hair blonde and always come brown, you know, just because I was not accepted. My name, Johannes, apparently is so difficult to say, they changed it to Johnny. And just recently, I reclaimed myself and called myself Johannes Tadeo. And other students are continuing to suffer at this institution, whether you're a person of color, suffering from disabilities, or LGBTQ. So I urge you to really consider passing House Bill 3308. And remember my story. Remember their stories. Remember the stories that you have heard in the previous meetings as well. Because we are suffering. We come to this institution to be someone, to hopefully, you know, have your position. I'm not saying I'm going to take it.
Anytime. Especially next.
Yeah. So please consider it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for this panel? I just want to say I thank you all for being willing to share your stories and hopefully giving people who didn't have a lot of those problems the opportunity through your eyes to see the difficulties that are presented to you because of that. So I for one, really appreciate that, and thank you for being willing to share that with us. So thank you. And, okay, we have one more person on this group. Okay. And that's Manuel Mejia, is that right? I can never get that last name. I'll get these letters eventually. And then we have Senator Dembro in the... Okay, he'll be right back.
Chair Roblan, Vice Chair Knopf, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Manuel Mejia Gonzalez. I am a student at Lane Community College as well as Multicultural Programs Coordinator with its residing student government. And I'm here as well to ask you to support House Bill 3308. All of these stories you have heard, mine being the last one, is one chosen story by students of how they have been marginalized, treated unfairly, criminalized, discriminated against. And sadly, I'm here to tell you that that happens, those stories happen a couple times within the last couple hours, just here in our state, to our students, to me on a daily basis. I'm really thankful for the folks that that came to tell you all of the stories. Mine is me being a member of the Lane Community College Professional Development and Implementation Committee for Cultural Proficiency has not seen this policy move as fast as I would like it to move. I know that it would take time, but I would love the support from my state to do this. This policy we are building hasn't been implemented, is in the process, but it is imperative that our higher education institutions hold the capacity to, in fact, respond effectively and respectfully to our students of color, students from LGBTQ communities, students with disabilities, alter able students. So I want to know that my institution is sentimentally intimate with the asymmetrical relations of power and privilege that do take part of the, that do make part of the class, make part of the students' lives out of the class, because I currently do not feel in a safe environment when entering my classes. I do not feel in a learning environment. Just last term, I had a professor who was very intimidatingly and angry look at me whenever he did not understand what I was saying with my heavy accent, as he described it. While I understand that it might be a little frustrating to ask me what I said for a second time, I do not think that I am not understandable. I have really practiced a lot to get rid of my accent. This is as best as it has gotten. Furthermore, I have been taught as less smart, and in many cases given lower expectations, which is not one of the main core learning outcomes, just because of my accent and the way that my specific characteristics are perceived by certain folks in faculty as well as in staff. I am by no means a traditional student, but this institution should know how to treat me effectively and respectfully, as I said before. I want to know that my professors know that it is more important to pay attention to the words I say rather than to pay attention to the accent that carries them. I also want them to know the fact that my parents have never gone past middle school, although blinds me when navigating college, by no means makes me unintelligent. I have always dreamed of the class in which, using terminology from a very famous dream, am judged by the content of my character rather than the color of my skin, folks. And based on this, I would really urge you all to remember my story, remember the stories of all of the students, and remember that this is one story that it probably repeats itself a lot of times within hours. Thank you very much for the time and opportunity to present my testimony to you today. I respectfully ask this committee to vote yes on House Bill 3308 and to remember my story when voting on this.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much.
Yeah.
So, is there anyone else who I missed or who has been sitting out there and now wants to say something? I don't see anyone. So, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3308. And we were going to reopen. Do we see Senator? Okay, so Senator Denbrough wanted to come put on the record a statement about 3335. And so I will wait for a few minutes. So let's take a short recess.
All right.
Tuesday or something like that.
Okay, so like,
mics are on.
Maybe like Thursday might work.
Lights are on. We're gonna close right now. So I just, because he's not coming back. Exactly. So I think that does it for the day. I didn't reopen it, right? Okay. So it's already been closed. That's all.
We're done.
It's adjourned.
Thank you. Pardon.
I think you did open it.
3335. If I have it is now closed, and we are adjourned. Thank you all.
It is possible to adjourn.
You're here all night.
Possible to adjourn.
You're here all night.